Did you know we have completely ad-free early access to all of our episodes? Well, we do. Not only that, but we have dozens of bonus episodes waiting for you. Head on over to patreon.com/ghosttownpod, and you can check it out for 7 days absolutely free. That's patreon.com/ghosttownpod.
As we wrap up 2025, one thing's clear. Uncertainty isn't temporary. It's the world we live in now. Noble Gold Investments helps Americans protect what they've built with real gold and silver, holding value when everything else feels uncertain. Visit NobleGoldInvestments.com and take your first step toward a safe future. This holiday season, when you open up a qualified account, you'll receive 10 one-ounce commemorative silver holiday coins. Visit Noble Gold today.
Past performance may not be indicative of future results. Investing in precious metals, including gold, involves risks. Consult with your tax attorney or financial professional before making an investment decision.
A spiritual hoax. I'm Rebecca Lieb.
I'm Jason Horton.
And this is Ghost Town.
This is T. Lobsang Rampa bringing to you some information on a subject of which so many of you have written to me, the subject, a very popular one, meditation. What do you think when you hear that word, meditation? Do you think of some poor little scantily clad man sitting in a strange attitude, contemplating his navel? Do you?
The book, The Third Eye, by Tuesday Lobsang Rampa, was published in 1956. It was his autobiographical account of growing up in Tibet and studying Tibetan Buddhism. Very popular book.
Mm-hmm.
Tuesday Lobsang Rampa was not Tuesday Lobsang Rampa.
Uh-oh.
It was Cyril Henry Hoskins.
Ooh.
Not a Tibetan Buddhist monk, was a plumber from England. And I became a little bit obsessed because it was essentially a hoax.
Mm-hmm.
But despite it being a hoax and people knowing that it's a hoax, and I'm using the word hoax, we're going to maybe call it something else.
Mm-hmm.
It really doesn't stop the book from being sold. It doesn't mm-hmm. stop it from being a book that people enjoy.
Yeah.
It's just such an interesting cultural thing when it comes to especially Westerners getting into Buddhism.
Mm-hmm.
Not a ton of avenues, especially in the mid-1950s. I mean, it's not like a ton of avenues in general, I guess. I mean, compared to maybe, you know, Christianity or Judaism. Yeah. This book has done some good, I guess. It's this story of this guy who decided essentially that that's who he was.
Yeah.
He was this Tibetan monk. And people seem to be like, hey, this is how I got into Buddhism. And in 1956, what are you comparing it to?
Exactly.
Now, you have people that are, you know, scholars of Tibetan Buddhism that would read it and be like, this is, something's off,
mm-hmm.
and it's not accurate, and it doesn't sound like someone who is actually who they say they are. So it's a very kind of interesting thing, like, who's really harmed? Nobody.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very interesting how Westerners are like, oh, I love Buddhism. It's so great. And where they're getting the information from is somebody that...
Some plumber.
That I think it's a thing where maybe he really did think that who he really was.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit of like people talk about alternative facts.
Jesus Christ.
Or really how they identify
in
a way. It kind of goes back to that. But that really only comes out after they're busted.
Yeah.
A little background on Tuesday Lobsang Rampa. He claimed he was born to a wealthy Tibetan family and age 7, had joined the Shakpuri Lamasri in Lhasa. Pronunciations are horrible, and my Invisalign is in.
Mm-hmm.
So it's bad on many levels. Very sorry.
Mm-hmm.
He studied astrology, history, telepathy, hypnotism, reincarnation, and went through an actual operation to open up the third eye in the middle of his forehead.
Damn.
Book sold really well. But then people started to be like, say what?
Mm-hmm.
You heard him speak and he's like, he sounds like a British dude.
Yeah, I'm thinking like a chimney sweep.
He sounds like a British dude, like from Surrey, like from outside of London. He sounded like
oi, oi.
I mean, I don't know if he kind of accent he had, you know. So people wondered why he spoke English like a native-born speaker, but he claimed that he learned the language in a Japanese prisoner of war camp.
That's how he learned it.
Like I said, scholars, people that were well-versed, tons of errors in the book. And he talked about the third eye, which we all kind of, you know, the third eye, open your third eye. He talked about it as if like, oh, no, you get the middle of your forehead drilled. It's not a metaphorical third eye. You know, like your chakras. I mean, this guy probably was like, no, you just dig a hole in your chest.
It's like a lobotomy in your face.
Sort of, to open up that third eye. And there was somebody that was on his heels. A Tibetologist, Heinrich Harrer, hired a private detective.
Great.
To, you know, kind of say, like, kind of vet this dude.
Mm-hmm.
And Clifford Burgess, the private investigator, published the results of his investigation in February 1958 in the Daily Mail.
Okay.
And he said Rampa had never been to Tibet and never had any operation done to his forehead. I mean, I don't know how that's not clear. And to describe him, I don't know if he shaved his head, was bald. He looks like he could be a British dude, but he also looks like what Yul Brynner looked like in The King and I.
Okay.
Like kind of that look.
Like co-opting an aesthetic that is not his own.
Yeah, but it is him. But when you, you know, you wear a certain thing.
Yeah.
The way everything's framed.
Like a shawl and a bald head.
And it's on a published book.
Oy.
Who's to say, especially if you're from the U.S., like who's to say this isn't what it is? Especially if you're not actually studying it. Like, I read Siddhartha when I was in college.
Mm-hmm.
Different thing, but like, I didn't know. I was just reading because I was like, oh, this is a book. You know, mm-hmm. I'm reading this book. And I remember it being a good book, but what I couldn't tell you if it was correct or not correct at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, someone like, well, I guess they embrace the language of this British person who is writing about Tibetan Buddhism.
And that he just learned it from a Japanese POW camp?
Again, don't know how that worked, but sure.
He was actually Cyril Henry Hoskins, born in Devon, England, the son of a plumber. He worked as an assistant to his father in plumbing, mm-hmm. and then he worked as an employee of a surgical implements firm and a clerk in a correspondence school.
Hmm.
But he always been interested in the occult.
Cool.
So he had an interest. Yeah.
That's cool.
That's a cool interest.
Yeah.
And he studied it in his spare time, whatever he can get his hands on, you know, Aleister Crowley or, you know, I'm sure other occults and interesting religions and schools of thought, belief systems.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, let me take it a step further, grew a beard, shaved his head, changed his name to Dr. Quan Suo.
You can't just put a doctor on your name. That's fucked.
And then he changed it again to Tuesday Lobsang Rampa.
So it's like favorite day of the week, name that sounds Tibetan.
Well, I think the Tuesday comes from the day of the week you're born in maybe Tibetan. I don't know. It's something like that. I'm not an expert, but I think that's where the Tuesday comes from.
Okay.
Plus, honestly, it sounds interesting.
It sounds cool as hell. It's a cool name. I'll give that
Everything
to him.
Is well manicured and, to this person's credit, successful.
Mm-hmm.
Did a successful job. All, you know, sounds like some. I think he may have not even graduated high school from what I've seen, but sounds. You have to have a relative sense of intelligence. Even though he was kind of found to be not who he says he was,
mm-hmm.
wrote 18 more books.
Oh, damn.
In the Rampa story, which is maybe the third book, he talked about how he fell out of a tree in his garden in Surrey, England.
Okay.
To photograph an owl.
Okay.
Sounds pretty cool.
Hmm.
I like owls. And then he fell out and got a concussion. And then when he woke up, a Buddhist monk came up to him. And that's how that started.
According to him,
maybe it did.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it didn't.
Yeah.
Again, this could be something where I really was looking for this person's state of mind. Was it somebody who was like, I'm a ghostwriter.
Yeah.
I'm ghostwriting these books because it's 1956.
Yeah.
And who's to say I can't do it? No one's stopping me from doing it. Or he really believed these things. I believe, though, a lot of stuff came out after he was busted and he was like, oh, but this is who I identify as.
Yeah.
I identify as, you know, if I'm like, I thought you said you had a Ferrari. My 2012 Subaru Outback identifies as a Ferrari, yeah, exactly. You know, and maybe, and that to me is true, then it's true.
Sure.
You know, it's, but it sounds like somebody who's like, listen, I like doing this.
Mm-hmm.
I, you know, have a genuine interest in it. I already successfully sold one book and they're still selling.
Yeah.
Why don't I write 18 more of them?
Oh my God, 18. It's very imperialist of him. It's very British of him. And again, I think for me, I just want to like keep reminding myself this is 1956, mid-50s.
And he found out in 58.
Yeah. So we're still pretty closed off culturally.
If you don't read that Daily Mail article... And the newspaper, you know, if you don't actually read the actual newspaper, then how are you going to know in Southern California, in Chicago, in Montana, Florida? You're not going to know those things, but the books are going to fly off the shelf.
Yeah. It's like he keeps calling me bloke and talking about copper piping, but the ideas are really real.
And I look to see what people's point of view is, because people will still talk about this book as an introduction to Tibetan Buddhism.
Wow.
And I think either some people don't know... Or they do know, but they're like...
Still good.
A lot of people overwhelmingly say, this is an interesting book to read. It's well written if you're not looking for like accuracy, but it's something that some people got a lot out of. So it wasn't like he was like, Buddhism is like being up in a tree and falling out. And that's page one. It was the stories were really interesting and well done. And I think it's also... the emotional response you get from a book.
Mm-hmm.
Everything, you're reading it at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
I talked about that book, what is it, The Art of Not Giving a Fuck book.
Oh, God.
And I never curse, that's the name of the book. It's one of those books, and, you know, it's great if you get something out of it. But it's one of those things where you're getting it at a time where your emotional response is ready for it, and it's being delivered in a way that's impactful.
Yeah.
Whether you utilize any of it, whether it's... actually useful or not doesn't matter, but at the time all those things are happening at once and you're ready to receive it. And I think that's a lot of what happened with this book. Even the Dalai Lama at the time was like, I don't connect or identify with this guy, but, and you know, I don't agree with the usage of Buddhism to sell books without and being dishonest, but he said did a lot for opening people up to Buddhism and Tibetan Buddhism.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And it's an honest response to get. And I think, and if somebody read it and got a lot out of it, I think that's great.
Yeah.
It's like I mean, it's...
all press is good press.
It's like who was... I don't know who is harmed. So after they found out who he was, he kind of took off. Like, you know, still wrote books, but he wasn't around to kind of revel in anything anymore. Mm-hmm. He went to Ireland. He eventually was like, oh, here's why... after he had some time to process it, or this is when he wanted to talk about it. Just being fair.
Yeah.
Allegedly. Sure. He said that, yes, I'm Cyril Henry Hoskins, but the soul of Rampa has transmigrated into his body. Therefore, according to him, all the information in the book is true. It's just a retrofitting of information.
Fucking, I hate that shit. I do. I think there's some value. It's like he wrote a book report that appealed to Westerners about Buddhism. And I think there is some merit in that, especially in this specific time and place. But again, it's co-opting this idea. It's profiting off of it. It's also taking away from a space for someone else who maybe, you know, lived a little more authentically as a monk in Buddhism or from that part of the world that could, you know, make their own profit off of the teachings.
And he probably maybe had the means to, in some way, you know, I don't know if it's because he was living in England or whatever. Right. It's like, oh, we have this kind of this spiritual being right here in England and we have the means to, you know, in Tibet, I don't know how many printing presses there are, but in England.
I'll be honest about it. Yeah. Don't fuck around. It's like going to a yoga. It's like you're not going to go to a yoga teacher. I'm fine taking a yoga class from a white person. I know it is not. It's a dissonance in the cultural ideals of yoga and ideas of yoga and then like this white Westerner who's teaching them to me. But I can see who's teaching them to me. Like I know there's transparency and like honesty in this person who's in front of me and what they're teaching to me versus this book where it's like, there's not at all. But when there is, I'm going to like, you know, fucking construe it into something that still works for me.
And what works for me is a little break.
Hi, we're Eliza,
Allison,
and Carlin,
and we're the hosts of Resolved Mysteries podcast. Our podcast follows the 80s and 90s television show Unsolved Mysteries, hosted by Robert Stack. We have a love for true crime and the unsolved.
If you don't remember Unsolved Mysteries, we forgive you, but you don't have to know to get into our show. If you like true crime stuff, ghost stuff, alien stuff, or just stories about weird shit like Bigfoot, this is your podcast.
The stories we cover range from totally ridiculous to truly heartbreaking. We do detailed research on all of the segments that Unsolved Mysteries aired, then drink some wine and give you the latest updates on every case. We talk about stories that will leave you laughing, crying, and occasionally outraged.
Resolved Mysteries podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your favorite pods. Join us and perhaps you may be able to help solve a mystery.
So in his book, Living with the Llama, L-A-M-A, It was described as being dictated to Rampa by his pet cat, Mrs. Fifi Grey Whiskers.
Oh my God, this gets worse and worse.
And then, you know, he was hit, he was still accused by the press that he was a phony and a con man. He went to live in Canada in the 80s with his wife, became Canadian citizens in 1973, and died in Calgary, Canada, in 1981 at the age of 70. Calgary is where my wife is from.
Oh.
She's in on it, I guess.
Probably. Is she the llama?
History is full of bizarre, unsolved mysteries. And over time, these stories have been bent by rumor, warped by social media, and twisted into legend. I'm Michael May, and on A Study of Strange, we dig into these real mysteries and seek the truth, as close as we can get anyway. Recently, we've covered true crime cases like the Greystone Mansion murder, the Red Lipstick Killer, and America's first reported serial killers. Of course, every now and then we also dive into the odd, esoteric, and paranormal, including vanishing people, haunted locations, and UFO history. So if you like your mysteries historical, or if you love a good debunking every now and then, search A Study of Strange wherever you listen to podcasts. And remember, the truth is always stranger than fiction.